Hello and welcome to the Made in Romance podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Bailey, and we also have my co-host here, Sab, aka SR7.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. How are you?
I'm not bad, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, just tired.
Aren't we all?
It's been one of those kind of insane weeks.
Yeah, it is.
But we won't talk about topical points of this because... Anyway, let's just move on. So on today's podcast, we're going to be talking about kinks in romance books. And we have titled this podcast, Ooh, That's Kinky. So guys, we're going to be talking about some pretty racy shit. So
buckle up, strap in.
Get ready for the ride. So we have actually taken this podcast as a suggestion from one of our listeners. So we're going to give a shout out to Kat Gray, who has actually been a guest on our podcast as well, but she suggested this episode to us. So thank you, Kat.
Thank you, Kat. Yes. Thank you. We're going to have so much fun with this one.
We hope that you enjoy this episode. So we decided to talk about like kinky sex, essentially, or kinks in romance books, because we have read quite a lot of these. Well, I have anyway. And it's quite a predominant theme now in certain subgenres of romance. So we thought we'd talk a bit about what type of kinks you might see in books. Obviously, we're not going to cover every single kink in the world because that would take forever. But we're going to go over some of the kind of predominant ones and a few ones that we might have never read. So
yeah,
we've got a little list to help us about different different kinks.
Do you know what I'm finding so distracting right now is on the link on the site?
Yeah,
they like draw you in with the questions like, are you into kinky sex?
Yes.
And like, oh, I'm so tempted to take a test.
Nah, I prefer vanilla most of the time is the other answer to that question. Okay, so. Well, guys, I mean, that is the question. Are you into reading kinky sex? And the answer is here, yes.
Yes. I think there's a difference between obviously reading kinky sex and being incredibly like turned on by it, and also experiencing it, because it's you need to kind of know your boundaries and whatnot, and kind of like, it's not just because you read it doesn't necessarily mean that it's kind of like what you want in your kind of like real life relationship, but each to his own, I suppose. But yeah, anyway, we're not going to talk about
our personal experiences with this type of thing. That's none of your business. Anyway, let's get into the list. So number one on the list is voyeurism. Now, I'm pretty sure everyone knows what voyeurism is, but we will give you the definition. Voyeurism is getting sexual excitement from watching others when they are naked or engaging in sex acts. So yeah, guys, I have never written voyeurism. Well, I kind of guess I have a little slightly in the Devil Syndicate, because obviously they watch each other fucking on occasion. But it's not like it's not a fetish that they have. Like, that's not something that they do like regularly as like, oh, that really turns me on type thing. But I have actually read a book that is essentially about voyeurism, about this club. I think it is actually called Voyeur, and people go there, they pay to watch people doing various acts. So they don't engage in the sex, they just watch people like having sex, and they can obviously do some stuff to themselves, or if they're there with their partner, they're able to get it on.
So it's, but just, it's basically no different to watching porn, though, right?
Except it's like live porn.
Yeah,
but it's you kind of like get to the guests get to pick exactly what they want the actors or whoever they are to play out for them. So I go, okay, so I want like a, I don't know, double penetration, or I want to watch people, you going down on this person, like stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I don't know why I went to DP, but okay.
No, it's okay. Like, it's fine.
So, but that's, you know, that's, the book was essentially not, it wasn't about the club, well, it kind of was, but yeah. So I've read, like, voyeurism is quite a thing in a romance books, and I've read it. Have you read about voyeurism?
I have to be honest and say no.
Oh, okay. Would that be something that you might, like, be interested in reading?
Yeah, because I'd like to consider myself... So there are some things that I say that I would never read, but I'm also a very curious person.
Yeah.
And I'm quite open. So like, I kind of feel like you shouldn't knock it till you try it. And I think I'm just kind of like in that frame of mind. I haven't, do you know what? I'll be honest. I haven't picked up a book, a romance book, in a long time. It's probably been like maybe a couple months now. But the last one that I'm the last one that I'm reading is, aside from yours, of course, is an MM private romance, which is very, very kinky and kind of, you know, there isn't any voyeurism there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I wouldn't say that I wouldn't read a book that features voyeurism.
Yeah.
I think for me, I would like to, I know that I need to kind of dive into different things, different romance genres and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I can always trust you to give me recommendations. But also, in a way, you probably also know me as a reader and what it is that I wouldn't be into or wouldn't particularly like.
Yeah, that's very true.
I think you're a lot braver than me because, yeah, they're just like, for example, I don't think I'd feel comfortable reading about like using drugs and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, because I know that you read a book that kind of featured like people taking drugs and
yeah, that was a
sounds was like a very intense book.
It was an intense book. Yeah, let's not go into that.
No, let's not. But yeah,
let's move along to the next item on our list.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is breath play. Oh, Jesus Christ! Okay, so for people who don't know what breath play is, so it's it refers to the BDSM practice of having your breathing restricted during sexual activity, but it's not the safest thing to do. Okay, so it's quite a dangerous thing because people have like died from asphyxiation and stuff like that if they're not careful. Yes, I have written breath play. I think we're all aware that I've done that.
Yes,
you have read. Okay, guys, I'm gonna name and shame the book. If you've read Prohibit by the Benson Siblings, you will have read breath play. I guess I was interested in this. I'm not interested, obviously, in real life. I have not really read too many. I don't think I've really read that much of breath play in, but I don't know why I decided to write it, really. It just happened. But yeah, this is not one of the safest things to do. You should really have the consent of your partner if you're going to engage in this sort of activity. I don't know what to say.
I haven't, apart from Prohibit.
Mm.
Let me think.
Oh, no, I have read a book that was specifically around breath play. It was like a short, and I don't really like the book, but I was interested in the concept. Mm-hmm. So that's actually kind of what's inspired me to write it.
I can't think. I'm sorry. Mm. I probably will not be able to offer a lot when it comes to thinking of whether I've read things, because my memory is absolutely appalling right now.
I doubt that you have read it as well.
I doubt
it's not very. It's not like something people write a ton in books, because I think it's.
But like, it's just. I mean, I probably may have come across it in a book where it's just during. Just like a scene or something, but I've kind of like not really, it's not really stayed with me as such, it's not really thrown me or anything like that, because you know there's obviously people who are you know into choking and stuff like that. You don't really think twice about that kind of stuff. It's
just is what it is, like
it is weird, it basically is what it is. But I think when I read Prohibit, I was pleasantly surprised when I realized that this is something that Jensen was clearly into, but because that particular first time scene was told from
his POV,
it was very interesting. Like I
it pushed some boundaries of just you but other people.
It pushed boundaries, but in a way where maybe because I know you and your way of writing, that I didn't feel that there was any real risk to the character's life. And, you know, for me, it was just incredibly exciting. And it's something that I will always remember this book for. And also I think what I find with you is often when you write new stories and stuff like that, there's always something new that you explore that you haven't before, and that's what and I think sometimes you do that a lot with your dirty books, which is nice. But sorry.
Anyway,
we can move on.
So the next one in the list is actually the term BDSM. So what does BDSM mean? BDSM means the B and the D are for bondage and discipline, and the D and the S is for domination and submission, and the S and the M is for sadism and masochism. So it's basically the catch-all for different aspects of the kink community. We know everyone, as most people who have aware where BDSM became a big thing in romance is from 50 Shades of Grey. We've already had a discussion about that, so we're not going to go too far into this, but yes, we have both read, if we've read anything with a kink in it, you probably read BDSM. I've written BDSM, we've read BDSM, everyone knows this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you've read 50 Shades of Grey, you've read BDSM. I'm not going to say it's good BDSM, but we've read BDSM. So yeah, that's the catch-all name. And there's lots of books in romance books. It's like a huge thing, especially in dark romance. BDSM is like big for kind of obvious reasons. So shall we go on to the next?
Let's do this. Let's go on to the next
point. Okay, number four is called a scene or scene play. So a scene is the term for a period of time in which the kink play goes down. So I've read a lot of books that say, well, I'm going to play out a scene. And a lot of the times they're in like BDSM clubs, and when I was first read this, I was like, what the fuck is a scene, like or what's scene play? And when I looked it up, I was like, oh, okay, now I understand what that means. It's kind of like the time that they set, someone set as to when they're going to be being like these, doing their kinks.
Like, is it role play?
It's not really role play, because it's not the same thing. It's just the term as I'm going to, like in the BDSM community, people go, I played out this scene with someone. As in, that's when I had my time, when I was the dom and she was the sub and we did all this stuff. And sometimes it's like that's just the time that it's planned when they do their kinks. It's not, that's kind of just what it's called. It's just a catch-all term for the Hopefully I'm making sense.
Yeah.
It's not like role play is just we are role playing, whereas a scene is like this is the time when we're doing our kinky time. And then when we end the scene is when we're no longer.
It's like you've just kind of like gone back to vanilla.
Yeah, go back to normal. Yeah. I see this term used more in like proper BDSM books where they're like into that scene or into that community, whereas I don't see it in like the kind of stuff that I normally read, which is where BDSM just happens between two partners.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. It's something I've like seen. It's just not big in romance books, I guess. Unless it's like in a kink club or something. Okay, let's go on to the... Okay, well, this one, we all know we've read this. Number 5 is dominant and submissive. Yeah, I don't even think I have to explain that.
You don't.
No, so I've written dom and sub relationships. I'm sure that we're all aware of this.
We are. And I can safely say, okay, I can say that I have found, so the last couple books I've been reading aside from yours, I say the MM romance, but I've also been reading FF romance.
Yes.
But this particular series of FF romance that I've been reading is solely around dominant and submissive relationships.
Yeah.
And I have to say, and the thing is that this was new to me, just as I say, like I'm kind of like exploring different sub-genres of romance and stuff like that, just to see kind of like what other, just to broaden my kind of like knowledge really. But it's really intriguing and interesting because I'm used to reading about dominant and submissive relationships in romance books and stuff, and I wanted to see if there was any real, if there was like a kind of difference when it comes to MM romance and FF romance.
Yeah,
I think there's no real difference as such, but it's just it's intriguing to me. It is, and I have no problem with it. Like I happily will, you know, we all just die. So we're just gonna like majority of the time I will pick up a book that does have dominant submissive relationships.
It's
kind of like a go-to kind of thing. But I love dark romance, but like the thing is with dark romance is I don't know, is it just me, or do you find like most of the books you pick up now do feature this within them? Aspect of it, you know.
I definitely say that a lot of them do, like a lot of them will have some sort of kink in them, because I think with dark romance, as we've talked about on the podcast before, there is that power, like a dom and sub relationship is about a power exchange, and I think that that's why it is so widely used in dark romance, because that is the premise of dark romance, is a power exchange between the, you know, one of them's got a higher power than the other one, and that is essentially what a dom and sub relationship is. The dom is the one who's seen to be in power, whereas actually I think the submissive has most of the power because they were the ones who says yes and no, when to stop. So I think that's why that's so widely used, because it mirrors what the genre is about.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, okay, so we'll go on to the next one, which is number 6 is a switch. So if someone is a switch, it means that they switch between the roles of being a dom and a sub. I think that that's quite interesting when, you know, I've read this quite a lot. People don't necessarily call themselves switches, but I have read quite a few books where the roles of the people aren't like, they're kind of in flux, as opposed to being you're the dom and you're the sub.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually interesting. From a psychological aspect, it's actually quite interesting. But we're not here to talk about psychology. But yeah, is that something you've seen in books?
I haven't. Oh gosh, let me. No, I haven't yet come across that. But I feel like maybe I might, because I still haven't finished that FF, the FF romance yet.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't finished the series because there's more books in there.
Yeah.
But I imagine that I may come across that.
Yeah.
But for now, I haven't. No.
Cool.
But like, see, this is interesting because I wouldn't assume that there would be a title for that. You know, like,
yeah,
you would think that naturally you could just decide to, one minute you're submissive and then another just be overcome with being dominant, but I didn't think that there would be a term for it. But so yeah, I agree, it's interesting. It's just, yeah, I'm just learning as we go down the list.
Yeah. But I think it's like there's a lots of terms for things in the BDSM community, so that people are, you know, when people are looking for someone to engage in like BDSM play, if you have the roles defined and someone goes, oh, well, I'm this, then it's very easy for them to go, okay, we can see whether we're compatible or not. I think that's why there's so many terms for these things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go on. Number 7 is sadism and masochism. Okay, let's give the definition. A sadist is someone who derives sexual pleasure out of inflicting physical pain or psychological humiliation on your partner. And a masochist is someone who derives sexual pleasure from receiving the pain or the humiliation. So, yeah, I've read a lot of this. I'm gonna lie. You know, people, I've read a lot of like pleasure pain play, mm-hmm. and I think actually I like writing that because it's an interesting thing, like that your body, that something that is, you know, people would think is painful, people can derive pleasure out of, and obviously the other person derives pleasure out of doling that out to people. I just think it's an interesting, again, the psychology behind it is interesting to me, but we won't talk about that.
I have definitely read this. Mm-hmm. I enjoy reading this.
Yes.
As Same. For writing it, so I don't think I'm brave as you. But I do know that I am kind of like venturing on slowly bringing that out of into my new stories because I want to explore a lot more,
yeah,
and be a bit more open with things. So I think it's like baby steps for me,
yeah,
but yeah, so I wouldn't rule it out.
No,
I think it's just taking me some time because it's still testing waters for me and stuff, but I definitely could see myself doing it, like writing it, but I just wouldn't dive straight into it and be like full blown, you know.
No, and then you also got me to kind of say, okay, well, this I'm not an expert, guys, but we're
needs to be Sarah approved,
the Sarah seal of approval.
Yep.
Apparently, this is now a thing. Okay, I don't know when this became a thing. Okay. Okay, let's move on to the next one. Oh God, golden showers and piss play. Okay, no. I'm just gonna put straight up say no.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never written this. I will never write this, and it is not something that I would enjoy reading.
No, I agree 100%.
Like, I don't have any issue with people who are into that. Just put that out there, but this to me is like a hard limit.
Yeah.
I can't deal with like those types of bodily functions being, yeah. Mm-mm. That's just, yeah. So and as you are the same, we'll move on from this.
Yeah, please.
Let's just get away from this. Move on from it. Okay, number 9 is edge play. So It says edge playing kink is any kind of activity that is further out there and considered more dangerous. What qualifies as edge play is different for everyone. So it could mean anything that involves blood or breaking the skin with certain whips. There are others who enjoy knife and needle play. For some, golden showers may be a regular part of their routine, but for others, that counts as edge play. It says anything involving intense physical pain is typically considered edge play, but sometimes in kink, the most intense scenes only involve psychological edge play. I didn't actually know that that's what edge play was until I read this.
I did not know, because I was waiting for that kind of kink, because I'm aware that it is a thing. I just didn't think it was edge play, but it does make sense.
I have read a book that does technically involve this, but I didn't really understand the concept of it until I read this definition. It was an MM romance. In fact, it's one of the first MM romances I ever read, and it was very heavy on the BDSM kind of thing. Also, it was weird because it was like the older guy was the sub and the younger guy, the much younger guy, was the dom. And it was just like, oh, okay. There was some stuff in that book that was, I was just found too much. But I have actually read it. I just didn't know that that's what it exactly was.
Have you read any books that involves blood?
No.
The only kind like I can think of is obviously paranormal romance vampires, because that's
that's not really the same.
I wouldn't. I don't know. Like, there's just things that will stand out in a book to me that will either like shock the crap out of me or make me like close the book and be like, I never want to touch you again because I feel so violated.
Yeah. I think as soon as I see like the term blood play, it just turns me away, because I'm like, I don't know if I want to read that. This is the whole, like, vampires, yeah, it's different, but like in normal, like contemporary, I'm just like, I get a bit, I'm not squeamish about blood, but it's also a bit like,
I am very squeamish about blood.
Exactly.
I faint like shit, like, so ironic that I'm a first aider and faint sight of blood. But anyway,
yeah, no, I don't, I mean, I'm not obsessed to reading edge play, but I don't think I would read blood play. It's just not for me. I don't think it's for me. I'm a try anything once thing, but yeah.
It's the same with you, not just, it's a hard limit.
I might like read it once and just to see, but even the idea of reading it once makes me uncomfortable. Okay, let's move on to the next term. And this is not something I've heard of this before. Sab hasn't. It's the term ARAC, which is not a kink. It stands for risk aware consensual kink. So it's basically a guideline to make sure that people are safe when they're playing. So yeah, guys, so it's whenever you're involved in any sort of kinks, you should always make sure that it's consensual between two parties, that, you know, they're both aware of what the risks are and how to handle them. I think this is quite important, because not when you're going to write scenes of things that are like quite extreme, you should always make sure that your both parties are doing it consensually. Although I know in a dark romance there can be dubious consent. But hey, this is just the genre.
There's another acronym for it, which is SSC, which stands for safe, sane and consensual. But they say that RAC is used more commonly, since what's considered sane varies so drastically from one person to the next, which is true.
Yeah.
yeah, everyone has like triggers and stuff like that. So
it's
so interesting to know how psychological all of this is.
Yeah.
But because you can go so deep with topic.
I think a lot of BDSM is about the psychology. It's not necessarily about the physical. A lot of BDSM comes from the psychological aspect of, like, you know, when you've got a dom and sub, it's a lot of that is about the psychological aspect of you being the submissive and them being the dominant. Like, that, it is a BDSM, I think, is more, it can be physical. Obviously, there's lots of physical things, but I think a lot of it is to do with the psychology of a person or what. But then again, a lot of sexual attract, like, what turns you on is a lot about your psycho, is actually a lot more psychological than people think, if that makes sense. But yeah, are we going on to the next one?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go.
Okay, number 11 is erotic humiliation. So that means essentially calling it says here, erotic humiliation exists on a spectrum. It can mean a dominant partner consensually calling their submissive partner names like slut during sex. But it can also be extreme, as someone being like consensually forced to watch their partner have sex with someone else in front of them. Like, this one is completely about psychology. So some people get off on being, like, called names or being humiliated. Being humiliated turns them on.
You know who I'm thinking of, right?
Oh, who are you thinking of?
In terms of name calling.
Okay.
I'm thinking of Rory.
Oh, he likes to... Yes, he does. He does like to call.
I'm thinking of Rory and Ash, yeah.
Yeah, he does get off on calling her rather derogatory terms.
Yeah, that is surprising to me, because Rory is a very quiet, introverted character. He's the lost soul who reads all the romance books, and yet, boom, erotic humiliation. And I love it.
You know, I think it has a lot to do with the fact that he is so repressed, that, like, when he comes, and a lot of his kinks are to do with that sort of, he is quite quiet, but then when it comes to sex, he's like, I am, you know, an uber dom in a lot of ways. But yeah, no, there you go. Okay, I have apparently written the erotic humor.
Yeah, you have. Did you forget?
Yeah, I did, kind of.
How did you do that? Like, that's, it was, it's literally one of my favorites.
Oh,
it is. he stands out to me because of that. And also, and I'll say why, what also really got to me is the fact that there you have Quinn, who's like the fucking alpha. And into, like, all that kind of, like
BDSM
dominant shit, and yet he doesn't like the fact that Rory takes it to that level, to me, which was absolutely hilarious and somewhat sweet to me, because Rory is like we always knew there was something really something more and dark to Rory, but, like, you never really knew. But Rory is the darkest of them all, because he likes to the chase, and
he likes, you know, to hunt.
He likes
to hunt. Yeah,
that's
why they call him Wolf Boy.
Like, I absolutely love Rory. Like, Rory to me is like my spirit animal.
Yeah,
like, Rory is my favorite. No, Quinn is my favorite, but Rory is on, like, my second favorite. But they're, like, yeah, for different reasons, I do adore them.
Yes.
So, yeah, sorry. Oh. I just thought.
No. That's fine. We can have a discussion of that. We can have a discussion about that. That's fine.
I think I've read erotic humiliation in, like, MM romance and stuff like that, and some in FF romance that I've been reading.
Yeah, I've definitely read it before. Like,
but it's not, like, it's not heavy.
Yeah.
Which is good. Because if it was too heavy, then I'd be, I think that would bother me a lot.
Yeah, me too. I don't. That's why I was very careful when I was writing Rory as to how far he went with that. I was like, I don't want it to come across as like being too degrading, because he's not. Like, he doesn't think. I think the thing of that about this erotic humiliation is that you don't actually think these things about this person. It's just because you get off on like saying that stuff or being called that stuff. It's not that you actually genuinely think that person is a slut or a whore or whatever it is that they will want to be called. Actually, I've written, you know what else, where else I've written kind of a little bit of erotic humiliation was in Dirty Dom, because she likes being called a whore. Oh my gosh, I forgot I've written this quite a lot.
Oh my god, is it?
Yes.
Is it? Really?
It turns her on to be called a whore.
I forgot. Oh yeah. Shit, I forgot. I'm so sorry.
Because he asks her what she wants to be like called, and she goes, and she told him she wanted to be called a whore because it turns her on. So there you go, there's more. Erotic humiliation is something I apparently use quite often. Just it's a less extreme version of it. It's like you don't have to be like super extreme with it. You can do it subtly. And I think that that's actually more interesting when it's a subtle thing.
Mm.
That's just me. Wow, we've talked about that for quite a bit.
I mean, no, it's fine.
It's fine. Okay. Let's move on to the next one. Oh gosh. Cuckolding. It is a form of the aforementioned erotic humiliation of watching your partner have sex with someone else. And yes, that's where the term cuck has now taken over by... Huh? I don't even know what that... Oh, people go around calling someone a cuck. So a cuck is a male submissive who gets off on his partner having sex with someone else.
I've never heard of that.
I have. I've not read it, but I know that that cuckolding is a big thing in like erotica.
The only and this isn't a book, but the only time I've seen this is in 365 Days.
Oh.
When he basically has her restrained and then brings someone in to basically.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's the only time I've seen that kind of what we're talking about, cuckolding. But I haven't read that.
No, I've not seen
that in books.
I have. I know that I'm aware of its existence, and I know people who have read it, but I don't personally find that sort of thing.
Oh my gosh, it says sometimes the cuck will be verbally mocked for having a smaller penis while his partner has sex with a real man. And sometimes the cuck is forced to stay at home, getting off on the knowledge that his partner is out having sex with someone bigger and stronger than him. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that's the kind of the next.
Okay. Oh, all right.
It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm just actually, sorry. I'm just reading this stuff and learning stuff. It's new.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's not my thing. Like, it's not something I enjoy reading, or I think I would enjoy.
I don't know if I would. I think that might be a hard limit for me.
Yeah. So I would definitely not write it either. Okay. The number 13 is aftercare. Now, aftercare isn't a kink, but it's another word for people who do engage in kink play, because it's basically making sure that after you're done, that your partner is cared for. Essentially.
Yeah, it's basically in the name.
Yeah. So, yeah, aftercare is where I actually think this is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Because your partner needs to be taken care of afterwards, especially if you're going to be inflicting things like physical pain and things like, or mental humiliation. I think it's very important to make sure that they are, both of you are in a bit, are okay afterwards, because I think some of these scenes can be quite extreme in terms of that type of thing.
I've heard of in FF romance series that I'm reading, I've heard of this term subspace.
Yes, me too. I've heard of that as well, yeah.
Where they kind of, the submissive or masochist enters this subspace when he or she reaches a natural chemical high or a change in mental and emotional balance of the brain chemistry and state of mind. So it's almost, and when I was reading the FF romance, one of the submissive actually went through that state where they kind of, like, it was very interesting for me to read because I've never read anything like that before, but it was almost kind of like a bit of a frightening kind of state of mind because you're so high and you're euphoric 1 minute, but then afterwards it's almost as if you suddenly feel incredibly vulnerable and clingy and you need reassurance and you need to feel loved and kind of protected, and therefore it's the Dom's responsibility to care for their sub, and that's what the aftercare is. And so it's you know, the Dom will cuddle them, the Dom will reassure them, the Dom will make sure that they're warm and that they're calm and their breathing's regulated. There's a lot of things I've learned reading this FF romance, but so I just thought of subspace because that's the term that would have fit here. I don't know if I'll bring up and down the list, but I just thought I'd throw that out there for anyone who didn't know or knew.
I have read about subspace before, and so yeah, I think aftercare is important. I've written about aftercare a little bit, but not to an extent. Like, it's really just making sure that your partner is okay afterwards, taking care of them. It's not, you know, I just kind of consider that as something that you should do anyway. But it's human. It's human. Okay, so number 14 is CBT. Now, most people would think that that stands for cognitive behavioral therapy. No, in the world of King Kick, stands for cock and ball torture. I don't need to explain what that means.
You don't, because even just reading it just sounds incredibly painful.
Yeah, no, I am not into this. I have actually read in the MM romance I was talking about, he had gave the sub a cock cage, and I was just like, this is not, that was what? Where I was like, mm-mm.
What is that?
It's something that you put, it's like a cage that they put around the dick, and when it gets hard, it makes it really hard, difficult and painful to get when you get hard because the cage is restricting your dick. Yeah.
Why?
Then I read this, I was like, no, this was a limit for me. Like, I don't know. It's just a no for me there.
Do you know how women have chastity belts?
Yes.
Do men have that?
That's a bit like a chastity belt.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's like a chastity device.
Oh.
Yes, it's just, I don't.
Huh. Okay, let's move on.
Number 15. I think this is something that everyone knows, is a foot fetish.
Have you written this?
No, because I really, this is something I have to admit to people. I hate feet.
Oh, you're not the only one.
I really, really hate feet to the point where I don't like looking at other people's feet when they're bare. I don't like feet touching me of other people's feet touching me. I literally, my husband is banned from touching me with his feet. I don't have an issue with my own feet. I do because I'm extremely ticklish on the undersides of my feet. So if anyone touches me there, I will fucking murder them. I will actually murder them. They will get kicked in the face. They will get kicked and beaten up. Anyone goes near the bottom of my feet. I can sort of deal with the top of my foot being stroked, but I do not like it at all. I just don't like people touching my feet, and I don't like feet touching me. I'm just I have a thing against feet. So for me to write a foot fetish is actually impossible because I literally have that much of an aversion to feet that I cannot get in the mindset of someone liking feet. I'm afraid to say. That sounds terrible, but...
No. I recently had this conversation and I naturally just on a daily have freezing cold feet. So like I always wear slippers.
Yeah.
I always wear slippers. Like there's never a time where I don't. But I'm the same. I don't like anyone touching my feet. I don't like feet being put on my feet. Like I will punch someone in the throat if they do, because I just don't like the feeling of it. I don't like it. It just bothers me so much.
Yeah.
It bothers me so much. And that's why I have like different kinds of slippers. Like I've got slippers which are like ankle boots kind of like slippers.
Yeah.
And like warm and fluffy. And also like what are those slippers called where they look like ballerina shoes?
Oh yeah, I have those.
Yeah, I love those slippers.
I love those.
So yeah, I'm constantly wearing slippers. So yeah, foot fetish is not a no for me.
Yeah, foot fetish is no for me as well.
I just find the whole thing of, you know, like sucking toes and stuff to be really gross and.
Okay. Yeah. Let's just move on because it's just.
Let's move on.
I'm sorry, people. We can't talk about this. It just makes me cringe, and I can't.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, let's move on. Number 16 is impact play. Essentially, refers to hitting or spanking a partner's body, using things like crops, paddles, and whips. Obviously, sometimes your hand. Yeah, I have written a lot of impact play.
Yeah, you have. I enjoy it very much, and I've read about this.
Because I just find it.
I don't think I would. When I do start to write, breaking out of my shell a bit, I don't think this is one of the things that I will start off with.
No,
but yeah,
But spanking is a very like mild form of it, which is unused by a lot of people. That's why it's kind of something I write about a lot, because it's like one of the safer things to do if you want to get into that kind of, you know, something like small to start off with, it's spanking.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I've written a lot of impact play. In fact, impact play is something that is a form of punishment in the Devil's Syndicate. Anyway. Okay. Number 17 is 24/7. This essentially means that enter an arrangement with someone that means that your consensual power exchange occurs full time, often while living together. So as opposed to it being a scene, which we've talked about what that is before, this is like someone who is living fully all the time as a dom and sub roles, which I think I've never written and I don't think I'll ever write. I wouldn't mind reading it, but I would think it would be a bit too much for me. Like, I don't know about you.
I've never read. No, I don't think I've ever read.
Yeah.
Isn't this like kind of like the kind of relationship that they had in 50 Shades?
It kind of did. I think that's what he wanted, but then that never actually happened.
Oh, okay.
Because it was never like they're doing it all the time. Like she's not always like, you know, they still went out to dinner and stuff. Whereas I think this is more like, this is a kind of a next level thing. Like it's like literally all the time. Like she has to be his, you know, like even when they're just like eating dinner, she's still the sub. Whereas like in Fifty Shades of Grey, it was mostly restricted to his playroom.
Oh my God. Do you know what movie I thought of?
What?
Secretary.
Oh my God, yes.
I love that movie.
I absolutely, that's what that, in fact, that's, that movie was one of the first times I'd ever really watched anything or read anything that was like properly kinky. So that was like my introduction to this, because I watched that a long time before I started reading like kinky romance. So it was like my introduction into that scene, and I adore that film so much. It's so good.
Everything about it was psychological, and it's a slow paced film, but I enjoyed every moment of that movie, because there were moments where you're just like, what the, this is so intense. I think it was the intensity of Mr. Gray and how he is, and knowing that there is a part of him, you kind of want to know why he is the way that he is, where that kind of stems from, but also knowing that I forgot her name.
I can't remember her name either.
Lee. Heroine. Oh, Lee. Yeah. Lee.
Yeah.
Knowing that she is incredibly vulnerable and so willing to please. But also she was, you know, she's so taken back by the whole thing, but at the same time, you know, the adjustment that it takes for her to kind of embrace that side of her.
Everything, and then when she does embrace it, he takes it all away, and it's like, no!
I know!
The whole thing.
Oh, man, I feel like we need to have a watch party. I feel like we need to
watch that film together, because we should sit on, like, voice chat and just watch
it. Yeah, we should do just stream it. That'll be great.
Okay, anyway, let's not talk.
Okay, sorry.
Sorry, podcast listeners. Anyway. We'll move on to the next thing, and that is age play. So this can be things like, it's basically you're taking on the role of someone whose ages aren't their own. So this could be things like, on the extreme scale of things, adult babies. And on the less extreme things, it's things like calling your partner daddy and baby girl and things like that. I have to admit that I find this kink a difficult one. Because,
like, yeah, sorry, go on.
No, well, because I think because I'm very, very close to my dad, the thought of calling someone else daddy, it makes me feel very uncomfortable.
I think it would vary for everyone. Didn't you read, like, did you ever read, like, books like what is it called? It's a subgenre, and it's just solely around this kind of stuff.
It's a daddy kink.
Daddy kink. Have you ever read those books?
Yeah.
So you've read those books.
I've read several of them, and every time I'm always like,
Does it feature? Is it more on the scale of calling your partner baby girl and daddy, or does it lean towards, like, adult baby and diaper play?
The most of it is more about the calling of him taking on the role of it's about the man taking on the role of being her, like, a father figure to her in terms of how he looks after her.
Mm-hmm.
And it, obviously she will call him daddy. Mm-hmm. And that's the level of it. It's like takes on that kind of role of parental figure, but in a sexual way as well, which I think is where that's where I find it too much, is because I just can't reconcile myself with it. I'm just like, no,
because
that's to me that my dad is not is not in any way sexual to me. So so there's a disconnect for me. So I can't, like, when I read it, I know because it takes me back to this, like, the relationship of a father and a daughter. Mm-hmm. It bothers me. Okay. I don't care if other people like that. It's just not my thing.
Yeah. I think the same way that you have, others who are into this maybe it's the opposite, where they never had a father figure, so they crave that kind of that kind of emotion, but also it's also a kink. But then it's not just strictly to do with the guy being daddy. There's also the flip side, where you have guys who will call girlfriends mum and stuff,
and then you have, I don't know if I want to mention it. Then we can go to one of Savinmai's favorite TV shows, where there is a full-on disturbing fetish with motherhood.
Oh, you talking about?
Yes. We're talking about The Boys, and we're talking about Homelander.
Oh, yeah.
That entire thing bothers me. But that's the type of thing that, like, that is a genuine, like, thing, is that sometimes if you don't have a mother figure, you kind of want that. And that's where the baby, like, the baby play comes into stuff like that, and, like, milk and, there's a lot. It's not just daddies. It's the other way around. There's adult babies. There's people who have taken on the role of, like, and the daddy kink can be quite extreme and be baby and daddy type thing. That is a thing. Like, it's not, you know, and I know of a book that contains that is an MN romance. And I was like, I'm not reading that because I just can't deal with it. So this is a thing that people do write in a lot of, the daddy kink is a very popular kink, guys.
I haven't read Daddy Kink.
I think that you should try reading one just to see how you feel.
I know. I don't. Okay, hold on. Because people have said, I don't know if this is one of them though.
Okay.
Am I correct or am I incorrect in saying Birthday Girl? Or is
That's a forbidden romance. That's got the daddy kink in it.
Is that an age?
An age gap romance is a separate thing to, like, a daddy kink. Like, because age gap is just that the ages are, you know, he's whatever 30 something and she's like 18 or 20. Whereas, like, the daddy kink is natural, full on, she calls him daddy. Whereas, like, so it is a separate thing. Although age gap romances can obviously have the daddy kink, but no, Birthday Girl does not have the daddy kink. I can confirm that. Have it to you, but I'm not going to do it on the podcast because I can't think of them off the top of my head. Oh no, I can actually. I promised myself I wasn't going to read this book, but I ended up reading it because it was because they did a free run of it, so I got it for free. But there's this book called Dangerous Measures, which is a retelling of Jasmine and Jafar as a relationship,
and that has
the daddy kink in it. And it bothered the fuck out of me.
Yeah. You told me about this.
I finally got around to reading it, and it had the daddy kink in it. And I was like, no. Even though it was very mild, it still was a no for me.
See, but I don't want anything to ruin my Disney experience.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't like it. I don't think you should read these books.
Thank you.
Like, you just would not read it. Like,
I won't.
I will think of another book that does have it that I will suggest to you at a later date. Anyway, let's move on from this.
Okay.
Number 19 is Rope Bondage. Okay, I think everyone knows what this is.
Yes.
Tying someone up with ropes. But they can also be as intricate as a shibari. I don't know how to pronounce that.
What was it?
Shibari or...
Shibari, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's which is the art form of Japanese rope tying, and it involves intricate knots and patterns. So that's part of rope bondage, so getting tied up.
I've not come across this in books.
I have.
What, shibari? Mm-hmm. Particularly shibari?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's interesting, like, being tied up and then... fucked. It's something that people enjoy, being restricted. I personally don't think I would enjoy shibari because I don't particularly like being restricted that much. But yeah,
What's the difference between rope bondage and like, okay, so I'm thinking back, you've not written Shibari.
No.
But being kind of restrained in certain positions.
Yeah, that could be considered like that type of play where it's essentially restraint play.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily rope bondage because not all of them are using ropes.
Mm-hmm.
But I have written stuff that's very mild in terms of that type of play, I guess, yeah. But, yeah. I've written it, I've read stuff like this. It's just, it doesn't really, it's not a shocking thing to me, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
Number 20 is fisting.
We don't need to explain.
I'm not going to explain what that means.
I haven't read anything.
I sadly have. Oh God, don't remind me of this book.
Oh, sorry.
it's a hard limit
for you then.
Yeah, like this is just no, like
not something that not something you would explore in your own books.
Hell no. Oh,
it's a no from both of us.
Yes, and I have read it and I was like, hell no. So okay, and the last on our list is orgasm control. So it's essentially where the submissive partner allows the dominant partner to decide when they get to come. It's a form of orgasm control. I actually use this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It can be also referred to, there is another thing that is as well. It can be something that the dominant will repeat, and that's called edging. So they go bring them to the edge of orgasm, then take it away, and then do that repeatedly. That's called edging. And I've written that into, that was something I wrote into the Devil Syndicate, as we know. But orgasm control is a, something that you can use as a mild thing, like I get to decide when you come. That's orgasm control, and that's something that doms will use quite a lot, I think, in my books.
Yeah. I personally like to read about orgasm control. I think it adds to sex scenes. I expect it.
It's a fun thing to kind of use. Like, I think it's interesting. And I think it also has a lot to do with, like, the power play as well. Because it's like, if you're the dominant, you're controlling the situation. So I think orgasm control is kind of expected in that respect. Because you're like, well, you're not allowed to come until I tell you to. It's quite hot, to be honest. But...
yeah. I think I would write that.
I find it interesting. Also, I think it's a turn on for the sub. Like, you know, I'm not allowed. She has to restrain herself before she comes, and then you can like have a more intense orgasm. That's what edging is supposed to do. Mm. At least from what I've read. I will put a disclaimer here. A lot of the things I write about, I have not tried personally, but it's called research. Because I've actually had someone ask me, have you done this? And I'm like, well, it's none of your business if I've done it personally or not.
So but aggressive.
I'm like, why would that be anyone's business about my personal life? It's not. But, you know, you just got to make sure, if you're going to write this stuff, I think you've got to make sure that you do your research and so that you write it in an appropriate way and don't piss off the BDSM community like 50 Shades of Grey did. Just going to say that, you know, you got to be careful when you write this stuff just to make sure that you don't do it in a way that's going to come across as like something that's abusive, because I don't think that BDSM is not a form of abuse. And I think people need to kind of understand that it's consensual. So like, we'll take the example of even when I wrote the scene of a non-consensual consensual sex, that was still consensual. They still had the discussion about it beforehand. And then I wrote the scene where it's kind of a... I'm not going to call this a rape fantasy or a rape scene because I don't agree with using the term rape. in pleasurable sex. So I will always refer to these scenes as non-consent fantasies, because they are not, because they are still consensual. And I think that we've got to, you know, I don't have an issue with people being into this thing as long as it's consensual. So I think that taking away that, so don't use a term that people should be using for that's actually a crime, which is, you know, for something that is supposed to be about pleasure and is consensual. That's why I would never use the term rape to describe those scenes, because they're not, the person is not actually being raped. So I think we have to be wary about the type of language we use when we're writing stuff that's supposed to be more eroticism as opposed to something that is illegal and is, you know, damaging to someone's psyche. So I'm going to make that a very distinct thing in this specific podcast, because I think it's important to say that.
Yeah.
We've got to be careful about the language we use when we're talking about scenes of that kind of level. Like, that's just me, though. But yes, I have actually gone there. I have written a consensual fantasy scene, and that was quite fun to write. I don't know how you feel about that.
You mean non-consensual?
Yeah. I don't think it's something that, like, lots of people write. I've only ever read it once before, and that's kind of actually what inspired me.
Are we talking about the same book?
Yeah. You haven't read this book, but obviously you know what I wrote when I wrote it.
Yeah. When you wrote it, you did it very well. It didn't make me feel uncomfortable. As for myself writing it, I'm not yet sure as to whether I would touch those waters yet. But I kind of want to stick with safer things or authors that I know aren't going to completely flip the script on me and, like, make me question everything about them, which is why I felt when you were writing, I was like, okay, this is good for me, because this is the first time that I've ever read something like this, and therefore, you know, it's not going to be out there, if that makes sense. Sorry, yeah, I'm not making any sense.
No, because you know that I would do it in a safe way that wasn't, you know, making the both wrong characters uncomfortable type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of where we've got to go with, like, whenever you're writing a kink, and it's not just this type of kink, it just makes sure that you're, one, do your research on it, and two, that you just write it appropriately and don't go to some extreme levels for shock value. Because I've seen that in books and I don't like it. So I'm like, why? What's the point? And yeah, that's my advice about writing kinks. But by all means, people, include whatever fuck kinks you want in your books. Just write them. Just don't do it in a way that's going to upset people for no reason. Because there's no point in doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're writing horror. And I know that horror, erotica and romance is a thing, and I find that disturbing, but hey, each to their own.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Okay, that I think that just about concludes our discussion on kinky sex in romance books, doesn't it?
I think so, yeah.
We'll say thank you again to Kat Gray for suggesting this. We hope she enjoys this episode specifically, but we hope you guys enjoy this episode too.
Yes.
And thank you for listening. So this was the Made in Romance podcast, and we will see you next time.
Catch you later, guys.
Bye-bye. Thank you.